Welcome to Soul Practice, a podcast featuring raw conversations about our crazy world and real practices that keep us grounded deep in our souls. Soul Practice, Raw Conversations, Real Practices is hosted by Kathy Escobar and Phyllis Mathis.
Okay, we're back with episode 3 of Soul Practice, which are raw conversations and real practices. I'm Kathy Escobar.
I'm Phyllis Mathis.
And we're just diving in and kind of laying some tracks, kind of on the work that we do.
Yeah. Last time I waxed eloquent about the work that I've been doing around the soul, writing and thinking and teaching. But today we get to hear about Kathy. And I just have to tell you, people, Kathy is known in this community as kind of a unicorn. Did you know that?
No.
Behind your back, we call you the unicorn.
I never knew that. I called Jared a unicorn, but I didn't know I was a unicorn.
Well, because you're so naturally, the way you lead, the way you build community, the way you think about kind of spiritual and community living is just so natural and so organic that it's always a wonder to watch you work and to see the things that you do in the world. And so I don't know that you know that about yourself.
I don't.
Because a lot of people are intentionally trying to do the things you just do naturally. And watching you and knowing you over these 15 years and watching the work that you do in the world, I really have seen people's lives change and be enriched and grow into these incredible people just because you built a space for them to do what they do at the refuge and also all over the city and in the country. You know, your voice is heard in a lot of ways that is really amazing and so digestible and so relatable that I think you kind of miss how really important it is. So in addition to the work that you're doing, like in real life, with real people every week, you're also a writer, an author, and practicing. The book we're going to be talking about today is your fifth book?
It's the fifth. Weary World came out after that. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I love this book so much because it's not about tips and tricks. I mean, practicing, when I listen to other people talk about practices, they're different than the 10 things that you talk about practicing in your book that are life-enriching human activities that that kind of reduce all of these big thoughts into actually living your life as a human being on the planet. So I am really excited to hear you summarize the ideas that you've had in your book and for people who are listening to be introduced to the topics.
Well, I'm super excited to talk about it, and it makes me think how both of us, like, you have to understand how hard it is to do what we're trying to do in 25 minutes to summarize. And so, like, the subversive soul, there's just so many things about it. And to summarize it down to a few points, and the same thing with practicing. But part of Soul Practice, this podcast, will be not to pick all these apart, but to integrate them into our conversations in a really natural way. And so, but it does help to kind of think about these concepts maybe in a more clear way. And I personally love practicing and have been really sad about it. I mean, it's a really hard thing because my soul did speak to me.
Yes.
In the writing of practicing, because anything book related for me, I mean, I didn't set out to write stuff. I set out to create community, and writing kind of came out of some of that. And some was honestly just my own angst. That's how I started blogging, the very beginning of The Refuge. And what's interesting is that I actually blogged under not my name, but under The Refuge. And then we didn't like put my name on it. And I'm an Enneagram 2, like helper, and just like, that's just me, and super codependent, and just don't know how to sometimes embrace. This is my voice. Mm-hmm. And so it was really hard for me. I did that for about a year. And then something shifted. I listened and was braver and started putting my name on it. And then when I actually made my own blog a few years after that, it was like a really big deal because I was used to kind of having my voice tucked in to other people's and not use it. And so I've learned that was a long time ago, 13 plus years of blogging on my own. So, and I still struggle with it today. I'm having a really hard time. Like, where do I fit in now? Who am I now? Mm-hmm. My soul knows, but it's tricky because of the reality of my story now. It's changing. I think my gut's kind of getting rearranged in Phyllis's language. She always says that, and it's really a good way to look at it. My guts have been rearranged. But when I think about practicing, I kind of go, oh, yeah. This all still matters.
Yeah.
And to be honest, we do want to skip over it.
Mm-hmm.
We do want to skip to something that we can stay in our head.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same thing. It's embodied. It's our soul embodied. It's kind of what we know what the world needs and we need more of, but we don't know how to do it. And we were taught in all most of our systems that you just needed to do A, B, and C, and then this happened. That is not what practicing is. It's not a formula. So it's changing yourself to change the world. And so the big premise in it is that we can't really do much about other people, but we can do something about ourselves. And I'd like to say that I think communities can do this together.
Mm-hmm.
And so at least in a more intentional way, or at least be processing it and trying in a better way. And so, but that change doesn't start with a theory. If we just think about this more. That's why theology conversations really get on my nerves.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves to talk about it. And frankly, like everyone likes to listen to things about it. And I think it's so dumb because it's like we kind of have enough of that. And I have a blog post, this is from years ago, and it says, while people are haggling over theology or something, want to talk about theology, the world is crying out for hope.
Yeah.
And I really think it is true on this. Like, while we are picking apart stupid Bible verses and, this is in this one tradition, but I'd say I'm in multi-faith conversations and all of the world religions are struggling with this, you know, like it's just so much easier to default that direction instead of the world is crying out for better practices. It really is. It's crying out for human beings embodying something in a better way. So I'm just going to go through the 10 practices really fast,
yeah,
and then I'd love to hear your take on it. So the first one is actually the first one that everyone wants to skip. And it is literally my life's work, which has been for 27 years, like I said. Everyone doesn't want to do the practice of healing.
I was going to say, you're going to say the H word, healing.
I know. No one wants to do this one.
Yeah.
They actually want to skip to the next one,
mm-hmm,
and which is the practice of listening. Or I can't remember if it's listening or loving next, but it doesn't matter. Everyone doesn't want to do the practice of healing because it is the hardest part to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just actually becoming healthier and looking at our relationship with ourselves, our relationship with others, our relationship with whatever, you know, God, whatever language you want to use for that. And that it's really hard to look at our unhealthy relationship patterns and move them into something else. And so I've been doing 12-step work for 17 years now related to codependency, and that's been a big piece. It was my job when I was at a big church, and then it's so much more than a job. And when I got introduced to the 12 steps, it really, I was already doing some of those things in some of the other groups I was in, the same principles with different language, and they work. But this, no one wants to go.
Yeah.
Addicts do. People who are really super desperate do. But average people go, I don't need to go to the 12-step group because they don't value in the same way, or the message is somehow a split apart,
mm-hmm,
message that's for those people that are that broken instead of looking at our own stuff. So my take is everybody can benefit from the principles of 12 steps. And the value of being really honest about our destructive patterns and our ones that aren't serving us very well that we learned and we're trying to learn a new way. So that's the practice of healing. And, it, you know, really all of these practices, I'll say this, you could like just stop there and park there for a long time. But they build on each other and are interrelated. And I think they're illuminated in different ways for different seasons. But you kind of need them all. And so the second one is centered on the practice of listening. And listening is really hard for most of us. It's just a hard thing. And we know how to, you know, use our words, or we don't. This is one thing about the practice of listening that I like to kind of mention, especially for people whose voices have been silenced, is that sometimes it's hard. It's like, I'm done listening. I need to talk. Mm-hmm. I'm talking more about in this fractured world that we do need to learn how to hold space for other people, listen to voices that have often been marginalized and we don't know how to do, and to hold space for those differences in a way that's healthy but then also honors our own story. And that's really tricky. A piece of what it's like maybe to have more ears and less mouth. Mm. And again, I want to say, and we'll talk about this more just in general, this is what's really hard if we have been silenced. Mm-hmm. We're actually supposed to speak more. But on the bigger thing, it's empathy, that people, everyone has a story, and those stories make a big difference. And then the practice of loving, you know, we all talk about love. Like, it's, oh, we just want to bring more love to the world. Love wins. All we need is love, you know, all those things. But the true practice of loving is really complicated. And I think some, because it goes back to what you shared last time about we didn't know how to love ourselves at all. Most people hate themselves. Mm-hmm. We were kind of taught to, or it's familiar. And that was my story for sure. I could actually talk about love until I was blue in the face and be, I'm perceived as a very loving person as a two. And I am, but I'm the first place to start with myself is really, really hard. And, this loving our neighbor as ourselves is a little piece of why the world's so jacked up. And so some things, just related to that, that the practice of love is lifelong work, and it can be inner work and it can be outer work. For sure. And then the next one is the practice of advocating. And I'm not sure I'm saying these in the right order. When I'm saying this, I've been a little bit distanced from the material. It doesn't really matter. But the idea, and it's not, I'm backing up for a second. I'm sorry, but it's super important to not to say, because the next one is a practice of including.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I don't want to get too far ahead. Including. And I would change that language now to say centering. But the including is really about making more spaces at all the tables. Mm. And why I would say centering now is because including still does kind of have that people in power are including other people. But centering what we do around all of the people who haven't been listened to. And that's across, you know, race, gender, class. That's a lot of my work has been. Abilities, ableism is not in this conversation a lot of times, and it's a really big deal. Mm-hmm. Seeing things through a certain kind of lens, the world works in a certain way, and centering / including is really easy to talk about and super hard to do in practice. And the next one is equalizing, and the practice of equalizing, you know, I wrote this in 2019. I started writing practicing in 2019, and a lot continues to happen in the world on anti-racism work. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about equalizing, I'm really, including is kind of more room at the table, and equalizing is about really noticing disparate power. And that recognizing our history is so bad.
Yeah.
And white supremacy, Christian supremacy, male supremacy, economic supremacy. I mean, there's, we could go on and on. American supremacy. And that equalizing is just lifelong work to really recognize disparate power and move towards the hope of more equality. and equity in the world. And oh my gosh, that's like, it is the this is the biggest chapter in the book. And it's the one that needs, in my opinion, so much extra tending to right now and is so hard to do. Mm-hmm. And here we are, two white women, you know, talking right. about all these things, but we're trying. We want to respect that there's work that needs to be done on that. And there's tangible things we can do. Then the practice of advocating. I kind of say everyone needs an advocate, someone to really come alongside and help us, and that we can be an advocate for other people. And so many things related to that that are really huge because, so many people like to do things to people or for people, and advocating is about doing things with people. That's a piece of equalizing, but it's really hard. Everyone doesn't really like that as much. Yeah. And that we know how to do over and under and kind of with is so crucial. And then the next practice is centered on the practice of mourning. And, you know, when I wrote this, I knew I'd worked in hard places my whole life, but I didn't understand fully the magnitude of how to live in grief was until Jared died. And I was able to add a few things into this, but I really want to talk a lot about this in soul practice because we're all grieving something. We've all lost something and we really actually want a formulaic non-soul way of making it through grief. And we just suck at mourning mm-hmm. and letting people mourn and mourning ourselves and trying to get through grief is like the dumbest language. And that grief, I keep learning grief has no rules. And that's not in here. That evolved after. But that's a piece of learning how to be people that can feel really deeply. And we can hold that space for each other, which is, it's just so critical in every way possible. The next is the practice of failing. And
that's my favorite.
I know. I love that it's your favorite. And I love that it's in there. Failing is like so underrated. And it's and I don't really even like using the word because I don't believe in failure. But it is true. We all feel it in different ways. Failed relationships, failed faith, failed parenting, failed soul work, failed therapy, failed yep. jobs. I mean, we have it all. And it's because I would go back to the last episode. We're always trying to figure things out. But the truth is that really embracing our humanity is important. And that failing is a part of life and it's misperceived. And that we need to really learn how to just own it and do it and make ourselves vulnerable and live with it and know we're always learning. And that welcome to the human race with really not that many great help in that category mm-hmm, mm-hmm. because shame is so big. And then the next one is, you know, I keep learning it more and more and I think the soul really needs it is the practice of resting and how critical it is to learn how to rest. And it's underrated too because we have like, oh, you know, soul care, quote unquote, you know, soul care is the big thing. And it's so much more than that. And soul care is important. I'm not saying it's not, but we have equated soul care with, you know, breaks from work for a day or, you know, bubble baths or, you know, yeah. pampering yourself. Yeah. And it's such through this white privilege lens. And it's so much more than that because it is actually learning how to unplug. It's about getting outside. It's about creating. It's about learning how to have our souls rest in the magnitude of the work mm-hmm. that's out there. I mean, it's really true. I feel it a lot of times. I'm just overwhelmed by the needs of the world and what can I do and how could I rest? Because there's work to be done. And I think a lot of us don't respect that need for rhythms of rest that really help us grow. And then the practice of celebrating, you know, that's one of my favorite mm-hmm. ones. And that's like, just, we need to really celebrate the little things. I mean, I'm celebrating practicing right now by doing this with you. This is a piece. Like, I'm celebrating that one, I'm here mm-hmm. after my kid dying, talking about things that I love with my friend, and that we are bringing a little dream to fruition 2 years later. And these things get really underrated. So we always think of big things that we have to celebrate, or we celebrate other people, but we don't celebrate ourselves. And I'm a big party thrower. COVID has really made that harder, but no, you can find ways to do it. And I think it's really underrated because we're so busy doing that we forget to take a stock of the little ways that we're making it in this world, and that mourning and celebrating really go together, and it's okay. I'm learning that in my life, and I think a lot of people feel disturbed about it. How can anything good be happening when the world's falling apart, or my life is falling apart, or my friend's life is falling apart? Am I allowed to? And the answer is yes, we need more celebrating. You know, I always say Jesus threw a good party, but and I think that's true, but it's so much more than that because we're so serious all the time is a piece of it. So the big premise on all of it is that none of these things are masterable, but and in the book, there's so many more things that are fleshed out about each of these, but I see them at work every day of my life, and I'm always trying to practice them and falling short of my ideals, which is a piece of why failing is so important, because those ideals are false. Mm-hmm. And that I feel like if we could all just keep processing it a little bit more and keep noticing the ways that we are trying, it would be better. So there you go. That's it. Whew.
Isn't it hard to just put it into a few words, but you've done a great job. And I love the 10 practices that you have identified, because they're bigger than just practices. I think practicing is it's like a sneaky word. Like it feels so doable. We're going to practice these things, but then we're practicing healing and we're practicing failing. But that's exactly how it is. It's more like there's 10 streams that flow into this big river of being a human being.
Yeah.
And they're so important and they're so real. But I love that you call it practicing, because it's something we have to do every day, all the time, and without this expectation of mastery.
Mm.
There's something about practicing all of those things. Practicing being human is actually what you're doing.
Yeah.
And it is a thing that we give attention to and we hold as important, and that we're not going to just tick the boxes and declare ourselves successful at practicing life. Just doing it is the way.
Yeah.
And so there's so many of those practices I can't wait to dig into deeper as we go, but it's very comprehensive and so human and so necessary. So
and the part that I really love is that the intersection between the soul and practicing. And I think where it intersects is a lot of the people that I work with, because faith shift, you know, finding your way forward and everything you believe is coming apart, came out in 2014. And I still get emails and stuff from people that are just entering into that stream of, you know, submitting to a faith system for a long time, serving, loving, getting paid by it, you know, all kinds of things. And then it all sort of coming apart. And what I love about practicing is that it crosses it all,
mm-hmm.
because it is human. And I would say, like, one of the things that's really special to me is all my kids, who are all over the place related to anything related to faith, love practicing. And some of their friends, you know, my kids are all in their early 20s, some a little bit on the other side of 20s, and or early 20s, is that they all resonate too. You know, I kind of thought it was a little bit just old people book.
Like a midlife book.
And I think that it's not, because people actually need some ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And like all things, I think we need to get better at actually not listening to just this is how you do it, which is part of that figure out or celebrity culture or guru-y kinds of things. Like, I just have to do this. Like, it's nuanced.
Yeah.
All of these things we're supposed to learn how to integrate ideas and then practice them in our context. And everyone's always searching for this one way. And that's the beautiful part about all of these. They all look so different for every human.
Mm-hmm.
because of our uniqueness and our own story and our own culture and our own everything. So I just always want to encourage people to like make up their own ways to do it. But the book does have some concepts and ideas, and I do like to just talk about how important it is to talk about the big ideas, but then to actually get our hands and our souls and our hearts dirty, and it's going to be so vulnerable. Yeah. And even though, and I'm thankful to Brené Brown for this, she's helped a lot with vulnerability. Mm-hmm. But I would say we still like to talk more about vulnerability than actually be vulnerable.
Yes.
And all of these, I mean, I feel so vulnerable all the time, and I do want to hold back and then figure out something again, mm-hmm. coming back to that, but learning how to go, oh my gosh, this is what humanity looks like. And we can add to this list, but that's enough to work on for a while.
Well, and I just want to add one more thing, because of the practices that you write about, and because they're so human and so essential to who we are and to becoming more whole in the world, embracing the practices and getting them into your lives will rearrange your guts.
Yeah.
So what I love about soul practicing is that we can talk about the soul and it moves into practice, or we can talk about practicing and it will actually enable your soul to be what you're called to be in the world. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Like,
it goes both ways. And I think that's how it's supposed to be. But that's what I love about the practices that you articulate, that if we do those things, we are going to connect with our souls.
Yeah.
And if we connect with our souls, we're going to end up doing these kinds of things.
I love that way of putting it. It's so good. And it just reminds me always, like, we always want to segment everything out. And it's all together.
It's all together.
It's all mixed up together in all its everything. And just learning the power of and. You know, and that we weren't taught that very good. No. We just wanted to be simpler, and it's super complicated. So we're ending all of our things related to a little soul, last soul thought, and a little last practice thought. So last soul thought for practicing.
Which of the practices, so I would ask our listeners to think about, as you were listening today, which of the practices really resonated deeply with you? Did you hear your soul saying, no, that's the one. That's the one. Listen to that. Start to practice that. And just see what you noticed in your body when you heard that, and which one of those you'd like to, ponder or sit with or listen to.
I love that. So it's like the little like spark in your soul in hearing any of those 10. And I would say, because I think to practice, and it has a lot of them embodied in there, but one little practice on this is actually to consider some of the ways we're healing right now. Because I think the pandemic especially, and then just kind of being hard on ourselves in general, we think we're not making enough movement.
Yeah.
And we're, it's like, oh my gosh, I have so much longer to go, so much more money to spend on therapy and, you know, all those things, instead of going, oh my gosh, I am doing this a little differently. And so that's the practice that I would say I would love for people to consider. What am I doing a little bit differently than I used to do? What is that little thing that's like, oh my gosh, I am moving in the world just a teeny bit differently, or in relationship, or how I treat myself, or whatever it is, and then honor it. And that takes some practice to dig down and listen and wonder about, oh my gosh, I hope that you can celebrate. And really be willing to go, yeah, I have made some movement in that area. Whether anybody sees it or not, I know. And that's always worth celebrating.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kathy, for summarizing your really important work. And it's been really fun being with you today.
Well, I love it. So we kind of laid some tracks these first three episodes. And now we're going to see what comes up in our conversations, but we're going to kind of look at some of our walks, and who knows, it might be what we think about tomorrow when we walk, but we know that every time that we come together here for these raw conversations and real practices, that we'll try to be as current as we can. We'll try to be as unplugged as we can. We'll try to be as honest as we can. And we hope that you can enter in and find yourself in the story.
Kathy Escobar and Phyllis Mathis write, speak, pastor, and counsel, and are dedicated to creating spaces that foster healing and change. You can learn more at kathyescobar.com and phyllismathis.com. Keep listening to your soul and keep practicing.